I begin the sermon this morning with a story from my own life, from when I was teaching elementary school many years ago in Kentucky. I was unpacking children's books at the time. My principal, Jay Jordan, walked into my classroom and closed the door. He surveyed my room and he shook his head. Definitely a Keith Cron fourth grade classroom. A few books here, a few chairs there, two bulletin boards scattered all over the floor. My desk was already swamped with papers. And the school year wouldn't start for 2 days yet. We looked at each other, and I knew. I was at the OK Corral. I wasn't sure what I was about to be shot for, but I knew something was up. Perhaps you've seen the face and the fidgeting of a 9-year-old child who lied to you 20 minutes before about having to use the restroom but now really needs to go. Well, my principal looks somewhat less composed than that. He asked me if I'd gotten his message from the day before about wanting to talk to him about something. I told him I had. Silence. More fidgeting. I began to have an inkling of what this conversation was going to be about. "I'm glad we're on your turf," Jay said. He looked at me for a minute and I nodded. Silence. Jay took a breath. "You know that Tristan Burke is no longer on your class list." I nodded again. His mother made me take him out of your class. Jay looked down and then back up. I nodded again. Tristan's mother was president of the PTA that year. I only vaguely knew who Tristan was, and the only thing I knew about him was that he was the most effeminate boy I'd encountered in 5 years of teaching. "His mother made me take him out of your class because she says she knows you're a homosexual. I don't know how she knows it, but she knows it." Jay looked at me, and I looked at him, and I could see the wheels spinning in his head. I would wonder later if he could see them spinning in mine. Fortunately and sadly, I had prepared for this moment. I had no doubts it would come at some point. Years of thinking about it had almost kept me from going into teaching, but the desire to teach had won out. I knew to say nothing. I knew to wait to be asked, and then I would answer yes. Only then. I raised my eyebrows back at him. More silence. Part of me was hoping that he would ask, that I'd be given an opportunity to tell him, that I could finally tell my story. He didn't ask. He broke the silence. "This is ridiculous," he said. "You're not the type of person to harm children." We looked at each other, and I nodded quietly, realizing the support that I was getting from him. It was a bittersweet moment for both of us. Jay finally mumbled, I shouldn't have pulled him out of your class." "She would have made your year horrible," I said. "Mine too, for that matter. It's okay." Jay nodded quietly back at me. "We did reading groups today," I said. "Tristan will be in my class for reading. It's an hour each day." Jay was firmer now. "You'll get my backing. She'll just have to deal with it. There's another parent concerned too. I'll deal with him as well." "We won't talk about this ever again." Jay surveyed my room. "Now get this room cleaned up. I don't know how you're going to be ready to start teaching in 2 days." He spun on his heels and he turned toward the door. He opened it and he turned back to me. "I'm glad we did this on your turf," he repeated. He looked at me one last time, tried to smile, and left, closing the door behind him. For the next 4 years, I never heard any of those complaints again. Tristan and I got along famously. I invited his mother to come into reading class to help out when she could, and she did. And she and I laughed a lot together that year. For me, she learned all about the fine art of teasing children, and probably a few other things. It occurs to me I should tell you why I'm here, why I'm now a Unitarian Universalist minister, director of the Transitions Office for our Unitarian Universalist Association, and am not teaching fourth grade anymore. I left teaching elementary school because I was afraid. Now, it's more than being afraid of being found out and fired for being a known homosexual, but that was certainly a part of it. The longer I stuck around in Kentucky, the greater the odds were that my private life would become public knowledge. My parents, who have not used the words gay or homosexual in the 30 years that I have been out to them, are a part of this story too. My father was a principal in the same school system I taught in. My mother taught first grade at a neighboring school as well. I never had the opportunity of thinking of fighting this battle alone. And my folks had given me a lifetime of modeling to know how to overprotect people. I knew any public battle I chose to engage in there would also have included them. I lived four lives when I lived in Lexington, Kentucky. I lived a work life where I loved the work of teaching elementary school. I lived a family life where I had dinner with my folks once a week, visited my grandmother a lot, overspent on my relatives at Christmas. I lived a gay life where I hung out with my friends, led a support group, and played volleyball. I lived a religious life where I sat on nearly every committee in my home Unitarian Universalist congregation and moved on to district and denominational work beyond that. I even managed to see some overlapping, certainly my work life and my family life some, and as I came out in my congregation, my gay life and my religious life began to emerge. I worked very hard at making my congregation a place that would be welcoming for bisexual, gay, lesbian, and transgender people. I worked very hard to bring bisexual, gay, lesbian, and transgender people into our congregation, and it happened. It happened, in part, because I and others started telling our stories in church. I was able to tell the story of having a crush on Mr. Gardner, my high school drama teacher, and as a 17-year-old working up the courage to tell him about that crush. I was able to tell the story of being raised in a very Southern Baptist church and having my Anita Bryant-type Sunday school teacher ask me if I agreed with her that homosexuals were sick people. I was able to tell the story of coming out to my parents and having my own father ask me if I was going to molest children while my mother cried. I was able to tell the story of meeting a Unitarian Universalist minister one night in a gay bar, and that's how I first learned about Unitarian Universalism. I was becoming aware that not only could I be 11 and 10 and 9 and 8 and 7 and 6 and 5 and 4 and 3 and 2 and 1, but I could talk about them as well. You see, my real fear was not that someone like my principal would ask me if I was gay, would ask me my story. My real fear is that I would never get to tell it. This is what the radical right wants, to control our society so that only certain approved stories could be told. This is why the work we did yesterday in the Beyond Categorical Thinking workshop, where we told stories and became more than a single story, is so vitally important to who we are and what we do. I was afraid that I would never get to have a life. I was afraid that I would always have four of them. My fear is not that my private life would become public knowledge. My fear is either that it never would or would happen only on someone else's terms. When I hear people say they want to make sure they have a private life, I wonder, do they really want two lives? Categories for human beings really are a bad idea, and I think I learned that during my conversation with my principal. As an aside, I do understand that what people are talking about when they say they want to make sure they have a private life. I'm all for that. But I just believe as human beings we do better when we only have one life to juggle. It's more than enough to do. So it was after this conversation with my principal that I began to know that I needed to make a change. I looked around me and I became sadly aware of the number of people I knew who were leading more than one life at a time. There was my good friend and teaching colleague across the hallway who had at one time been married to a man who had a sexual addiction for children, but she felt like she could never talk about this with anyone. My own father, who tries to pretend that he never had a father and never talks about him. My friend Steve, who quit playing the piano because he became a librarian. I still haven't figured that one out. My friend Sandra, who told no one about her live-in boyfriend, Dick. All of these people and so many more who never got to be 11. It was hardest for me to see in the children I taught. Children who came to school and then had to go home and cook and clean for younger brothers and sisters. Children who knew they could not fail. Children who would go home to wars. Children whom would have to parent their parents. And by the time they were 9 years old, they already knew they had to keep these lives quiet. Religious educator Maria Harris talks about implicit education, what we teach without ever actually saying it out loud. I knew I was implicitly teaching my students to have more than one life. There had to be a better way. I looked at how I might make it a better way, and I learned of cities that had non-discrimination policies for teachers, but back then, at that time, I didn't trust that those were real. I looked at the amount of work I had to do, and I thought about the fact that I often spent more time documenting what I taught, how I taught it, and who was there to hear it, than I did get to teach some days. So I decided to look elsewhere. The person I saw doing the most teaching was my minister and the other Unitarian Universalist ministers I knew. And they didn't have to fill out report cards either. I remember Jesus was a teacher in many ways. Rabbis consider themselves to be teachers. And I watched the Unitarian Universalist ministers I knew, and I watched the way they taught people around them, often by telling stories, often their own stories. At the same time, I'd begun leading homophobia workshops in Unitarian Universalist congregations. Now, not how to have more of it, but how to have less. And I learned quickly three things about teaching adults. One, they don't necessarily have longer attention spans than children. They just do a better job of faking. Usually engaging people on an emotional level increases their attentiveness. Two, adult learning is as much about unlearning as it is about learning. Three, the product isn't nearly as important as the process. So how would you teach someone to be less homophobic or less racist or less sexist or less ableist? Well, explicitly, you're teaching them about that oppression. Implicitly, you're teaching them about vulnerability. Now, that's where the possum shows up. That's where the magic happens. Because as people let themselves become more vulnerable, they became stronger and less homophobic, less racist, less sexist, less ableist. I did this for telling stories, sometimes my own stories. And I was blessed with the stories of others. I saw the possibility for having one life. A friend of mine from seminary and I were talking one day, and she said you could learn a fair amount about a person by asking them these four questions. One, when did you stop singing? Two, when did you stop dancing? Three, when did you stop playing? Four, when did you stop telling your story? For the record, I stopped singing in third grade when Mrs. Rice said I shouldn't sing anymore. though I'll still hum to myself if I think people aren't looking. I still go dancing, I still play, and as I told my friend Marianne, it's more a matter of when I started telling my story than when I stopped. I stopped telling my story at 14. It would be 10 years before I started telling some of my stories again. It's only since I've become a Unitarian Universalist minister that I've not had to figure out what story I could tell where. Like the story of the possum, one story leads to another. And when we hear our story in someone else's story, well, that's the magic. That's when we encounter mystery. What are your stories? Have you stopped telling them? Do you only tell them in certain places, in certain lives? How well do you know the stories of those around you? The stories in this room, your stories, are magical. I hope you are not afraid to tell them. They are your life, and they let you be fully 11, or whatever age you are. I hope you sing, dance, play, and tell your stories, and listen to the stories of others, and live your one life, and feel its magic.